I try to find ways in which I can both literally and metaphorically create space within the drawings so that we can sit with them differently, even in the pain and the trauma.
New York City-based artist Sean Leonardo is known for his charcoal drawings depicting high-profile incidents of police violence against Black and brown people.
My argument is that there is something to gain from this difficult imagery that is lost in the media noise of how they are typically presented to us.
Sean is Afro-Latino, and his work feels particularly relevant following the killings of Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and Rashard Brooks, images and videos of which were repeatedly shared by news outlets and on social media. But in March, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Cleveland canceled an exhibition of Sean's drawings after some local Black activists voiced their opposition to the show. A statement put out by the museum said, quote, "We encountered troubling community response that suggested at this time we were not prepared to engage with the lived experiences of pain and trauma that the work evokes." Sean was given little advance warning of the cancellation, and he told me that the museum's explanation didn't sit well with him for a few reasons.
There is an institutional failure in the ways that they intended to invite audiences, specifically Black and brown subjectivities, into a process in which we were discussing the work critically, but also with care. I don't pretend that this work is not difficult and that there is a very painful relationship to looking at these images, but I still deeply believe in what is possible. And more so, I also know and have experienced what type of nuanced, complex conversations can be elicited by the work.
And isn't that, the point of work of the work, though,
is
Sean?
Exactly. To use it as a jumping off point, to use it as a catalyst for conversations that would otherwise not happen. And also to expand the conversation, a conversation that is so often reduced to a news headline. And so what I will share with you is that those that have been codified by the museum as Black activist community that voice their grievances, concerns, that is fair. And while individuals have not had a physical experience with the work, I completely acknowledge how they might want to distance themselves and feel like it might cause harm.
Harm to whom, Sean? Harm to who?
Well, as it's being shared, harm to local community, Black and brown communities in Cleveland. And that is what has been initially vaguely spoken about by the museum, but that has more and more has been revealed, and more individuals have gone public regarding how they felt it would have been a bad moment for the work. My point of view, however, is that if we can't hold the conversations, if art can't lead those discussions, then we will never have them. And that actually I would invite the tension. I would invite the debate because that's what's necessary about the work.
You wrote a letter this month criticizing the museum's decision, saying that it was, quote, institutional white fragility that led to an act of censorship. The museum has apologized for canceling the show, and this month their director, Jill Snyder, stepped down. Between your letter and Snyder stepping down, where do you think the museum stands right now in terms of, is it headed in the right direction, or is there still institutional white fragility, in your words, that needs to be rooted out?
Well, let me first describe what I meant by that statement. I think what is evident to me is not that the museum had no capacity to engage audiences, Black and Brown community stakeholders, in this process. It's that there was no willingness to do so. And that at the first instance of potential pushback or concern, which, to be very honest, has as much to do with the museum's positionality in the community as it does my work and the content of my work, the failure of the institution was to meet that demand head on and to create space for the necessary, very difficult, intense conversations. And more so, to move beyond that, to enact any process without my voice. And that is, to me, what I shared in the statement was most hurtful. It's not necessarily that they arrived at this decision, because I could have arrived at a very similar decision as to how to host this exhibition or invite audiences in, is that I was excluded from the process entirely. And so, to directly respond to the other half of your question, time will tell. My fear is that, and this goes beyond me, this goes beyond my relationship with this museum. My fear is that in the short to long term, decisions will be made that are surface level. If there's not an internal commitment to reckoning with one's institutional whiteness, then the conversations will never be true. Then the work will never actualize deep systemic change. And that goes to the restructuring of leadership. That goes to the ways in which exhibitions are held, the conversations that are critical to audiences. That is the way in which people are welcome into the space. None of that will actually move into a place that is grounded in anti-racism unless the individuals within are willing to ask themselves some very hard question about their own white subjectivity.
Is one of those questions, Sean, also whether or not these institutions capitalize off of Black pain?
Mm-hmm. So that is a very, that's a necessary debate to have. And I think that is very much part of the pushback. People are sensitive to the ways in which, and have experiences in which white institutions have paraded Black trauma as a way to, again, prop up Black and Brown artists as a voice and as a way to connect to audiences that previously found these institutions irrelevant. And so to find a way to actually create those pathways in which the work like my own can still lead to critical conversations is a difficult, intricate process. And, you know, that goes well beyond me. What I will say, however, is that the debate is still necessary, and that this is the part of the way we hold institutions accountable, because the opposite is that they move away from this work and that they don't take any daring steps to hosting work that is ugly, that is hard.
Speaking of work that is hard, we are obviously in a moment of racial reckoning and a racial uprising for social justice that has taken hold of the country after the killing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and others. And as a result of those, we are seeing a number of public art installations, some, you know, with the backing of institutions, but many just people taking up their supplies and painting over plywood that has been covering the windows of many businesses for weeks, painting murals on the sides of walls in remembrance of the names of the people that have been killed by police violence. And we did a segment on the show this week sort of talking about how Black pain and Black mourning has changed in this moment. And I'm wondering what you would say to younger artists who are focusing on street art and art that's much more for the public consumption rather than working within institutions at this time. Is the goal still to be at the Whitney?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. And I think it also intersects with the question of what to do with public monuments that are being torn down. I would say to younger artists that there are many ways to be an artist, and that there are many ways to therefore create impact and have a ripple effect with your work. Some of that takes place within the institutional space because there is still leverage to be gained there. There's still exposure. There's still ways in which an institution can and should amplify our practices. But that's not the only way to be an artist. And actually, half of my practice is socially engaged work that lives far outside of the art, traditional art space realm. Works that are necessarily conducted in schools, housing developments, and everything in between. And so the question to me is not how we choose to have, or I should say, the question to me is, yes, continuing to choose how and what kind of relationship we have with institutions, but also to continue to return to what is necessary in the work. How do we connect to the communities that we are in service of? I never speak for anyone, but my work is always in service of BIPOC folks. And so I will take my work anywhere that I must in order for that connection to be enabled.
Sean, there have been a number of institutions, including some arts institutions, that have released statements reflecting their support for Black Lives Matter and racial justice. Have you seen any indication that any of the museums are actually taking actions to back up their statements?
I think it's too early to say or to see if these actions will become visible. But I will say that something feels different in this moment. Because of our voices and the visibility that we are, and I say we because I'm talking about art practitioners, art workers, those that have invested in these art institutions are calling out the behaviors and practices that have harmed us, that have been shaping the ways in which have been shaping the ways in which we work with these institutions for decades. What feels different now is that because of our airing out, museums have been forced to compete with one another. And so now we have very visible, documented statements as to what institutions will do. And that we didn't have before. We had our demands. But now we have the organizational voices saying what they're committing to. And that we can hold up to them in the near future.
This conversation has been a tough one. We've been talking a lot about pain and representation, but we're also asking people in this moment, and a lot of our guests, we've been asking them this question: is there something you're doing, Sean, in this moment that's so hard for so many people? It could be the smallest thing that's bringing you some joy these days.
Yeah, Tanzina, thank you. You know, this is what people and critics won't understand necessarily. You know, an artist, there are artists like myself that don't seclude themselves into the safety of their studio. We are deeply embedded and invested in the liberation, safety, and well-being of our communities. The work that I do in drawing is reflective of my practice in the justice system and beyond is reflective of the work that I do with my neighbors, with young Black and Brown folks. We are part of this work. And this is going back to your art life equation. This is what we are made of. And so when there's pain and trauma in the streets, it's not just that we're reflecting that on a piece of paper, it's that we live it. And this is our work. It is our responsibility to interrogate what is happening in the streets, to interrogate how these images circulate in society, to interrogate the language that is projected onto our Black and Brown bodies. And so the only way that I can really answer your question is to say that in all of the ugliness, in all of the mess, what sustains me are these moments of joy that I see in the lives and bodies of the people that I work with and for. Because there will be so many derailments, so many losses along the way. It's the beautiful struggle, as Ta-Nehisi Coates describes. But in those losses, every single moment we are able to smile, every single moment that we are in a place where we feel we can live fully, acknowledging all the mess, not pushing it away, and still living fully, that's to me, that's what sustains me.
Sean Leonardo is an artist based in New York City. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanzina.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.